What a week we've all had. What a year. This particular week came rather late in an exceptionally long year, didn't it? Holding a national election in the midst of a pandemic would prove challenging. We all expected that. We also knew, following the odds-defying outcome of the last presidential election in this country, to prepare ourselves for the unexpected. On election night, a minister friend of mine texted me how hard it was to believe that 4 years had passed since the last presidential race, when she and I watched it with our husbands and a few friends, and went to bed without knowing the final results. By the morning after that election, the results were clear, if startling. When I woke up that Wednesday, I understood that I lived in a deeply divided America, one where an electoral vote and a popular vote could be so divergent. What happens when the will of the people differs that much? Is there a center that holds anyway? This past Wednesday, we again saw divisions on full display. We had a presidential race that was still too close to call. That same day, across the United States, people joined in count every vote rallies as the White House called for vote tallies to stop. Those tallies would not stop and indeed would continue for days, as would the rallies calling for a complete count. In 2020, Americans turned out in record numbers to vote. They voted by mail. They voted early. They voted after standing in line for hours on Tuesday, November 3rd, wearing masks. They voted at a rate not seen since 1908, since prior to the passage of women's suffrage, and this year, a woman's name appeared on the ballot itself. So many of our members and friends of UU Wellesley Hills were active in voter drives, some working with UU The Vote, others taking part in different initiatives. It was obvious to all of us how much the franchise mattered. The faith people were putting in the democratic process was profound. The more voters, we concluded, the better. When did we all decide this, I wondered, and how? Even in an era as polarized as ours, we put such stock in one another. As Unitarian Universalists, we lay claim to a tradition that prizes the role of conscience and exhorts us to consult with our own routinely. Throughout this church year, I am preaching a sermon series on what the Reverend Dr. James Luther Adams, a past minister of this congregation, a prominent theologian, and a noted 20th century social ethicist, called the five smooth stones of religious liberalism. These enumerate a handful of our key beliefs. First, that revelation is ongoing and understanding can always be deepened. Second, that we need to enter freely into mutual relationships and form communities based on our consent. Third, that we are morally obligated to make efforts for the greater good of those communities. Fourth, that we must commit ourselves to social organizations that benefit others. And fifth, and finally, that we must always hold out ultimate hope. Today, we look at the second of these, a belief in free and mutual relationships. Democracies depend on the consent of the governed to abide by the use of democratic processes, regardless of their results, of whether we win or lose any given contest. Essentially, we are telling one another, you make sure to count my vote, and I will make sure to count yours. We will both count them equally, even though we will each, of course, have a preference for the particular vote that we cast. As Dr. Adams reminded us in his second point of five, free choice is a principle without which religion or society or politics cannot be liberal. He considered this principle to be rooted in the basic theological assertion that all of us are children of one God, by which is meant that all persons by nature potentially share in the deepest meanings of existence, that all have the capacity for discovering or responding to saving truth without exception he would add, and that all are responsible for selecting and putting into action the right means and ends of cooperation for the fulfillment of human destiny. Democracies require our preserving the integrity of every vote and thereby honoring the dignity of each individual, to the end that our shared human destiny is fulfilled. Democracies ask all of us to believe ourselves no more infallible than any of our neighbors, which is as demanding a spiritual discipline as any in the world today. Democracies demand that we count every last vote in every blue state and red state and purple one, too. In this unprecedented election year, we had to wait until the weekend for a winner to be called. News outlets did this on the basis of the electoral count from swing states. But votes are still being counted and will continue to be counted across this country until the counts are done. And even then, recounts may follow. The popular vote still matters to the historical record. A lot of people this year feared that our election would be disrupted. Please note that it was not. Note instead that the election was a prolonged process and that its process was repeatedly guarded across America. One group of protesters at a count every vote rally sang, "We will defend democracy and we will win. We will defend democracy and we will win." They won, and consequently we all did. At stake with the survival of American democracy is the survival of liberal democracy. In his book, A Thousand Small Sanities, The Moral Adventure of Liberalism, writer Adam Gopnik explains that the practice of liberal democracy involves that magical marriage of free individuals and fair laws, of the pursuit of happiness with the practice of disinterested justice, everyone treated the same. Like other cultural critics of our day, he sees the practices of liberal democracy under almost constant assault. In consequence, he concludes, it will need our continuous defense. We will need to pay careful attention to instances where patriotism is being replaced with nationalism, pluralism by tribalism, impersonal justice by the tyrannical whim of autocrats who think only to punish their enemies and reward their hitmen, Gopnik insists. When liberal democracies succeed, autocrats fail. Sooner or later, they fail. And the people, that includes all of us, by the way, prevail. The most unpopular president in modern history, a man who was impeached during an election year, lost a very cynical bid for re-election. He does not need to concede defeat in this race. He has already been defeated. Spontaneous celebrations in cities across America made that abundantly clear. What exactly is the nature of this victory that people are claiming? Like Dr. Adams, Gopnik challenges us to comprehend liberalism in its fundamentally moral dimension. His book opens with him describing a conversation he had with his distressed teenage daughter about the 2016 election results. Attempting to dad-splain the importance of liberal values to her, he soon felt impelled to draft a manifesto about those, especially for younger generations at risk for losing all confidence in them. It's a myth, as a new generation of scholars has shown, that liberalism is obsessed with individualism, a myth that liberalism doesn't have a rich imagination of common fates and shared values, he declares. Wherever there is a movement for humane reform, there's always a liberal around somewhere. Perhaps that liberal is you. If so, you will always have work to do. According to Gopnik, the critical liberal words are not liberty and democracy alone, vital though they are, but also humanity and reform, tolerance and pluralism, self-realization and autonomy, the vocabulary of passionate connection and self-chosen community. He recognizes that these are hardly uncontroversial or simple concepts, but they point to a range of specific public ambitions and policies. One especially obvious ambition is election reform. As stirring as I found the display of Election Day heroics, heroics should not be necessary in a liberal democracy like ours. Polling places should be protected in adequate number, and threats of voter suppression or intimidation should have no cover in our America. For the health of our democracy, we need the broadest possible participation. How else can we have a truly representative government? Late in the week, all our eyes were trained on Pennsylvania, and more specifically on Philadelphia, that cradle of democracy, where the Declaration of Independence was signed and where the Liberty Bell cracked. My husband and I met in Philadelphia, so we have a tender spot for the place and its residents. As the vote count in Philadelphia determined the presidential race, it earned itself the title Flipadelphia. I hope that the city will now be remembered for a long time to come for reversing some of the worst and most concerning trends in American democracy, those disturbing patterns we have seen emerge in recent years here. Liberalism is a fact-first philosophy with a feelings-first history, Gopnik writes. A fact-first philosophy with a feelings-first history. Liberal humanism is a whole in which the humanism always precedes the liberalism. Powerful new feelings about a compassionate connection to other people, about community, have always been informally shared before they are crystallized, he contends. Understanding the emotional underpinnings of liberalism is essential to understanding its political project. The personal and the political, the social and emotional domains all are part of the ongoing moral adventure of liberalism. Being liberal does not mean being partisan. It means becoming increasingly inclined to embrace the universal need for human dignity. In our case, it means us recognizing one another sincerely as fellow Americans. Just such a unifying message was delivered in the acceptance speeches given last night by our president and vice president-elect. They celebrated the historic election of a woman of color to the second highest office in the land, because every historic first is formative and heralds all the possibilities that can follow. Their combined presidential ticket garnered more votes than any other one in American history. Together, they decisively won the popular vote. The voters have delivered us a clear victory, a convincing victory, a victory for we the people, the president-elect declared. Now that the campaign is over, what's the people's will? What is our mandate? I believe it is this. Americans have called on us to marshal the forces of decency and of fairness. I also believe that is our national mandate now. Over the past 4 years, I've witnessed the same horrors you did, having a would-be autocrat in the White House. Our democratic norms and public discourse and communal standards and legal protections and civic bonds and American ideals have all been degraded during his presidency. We need to strengthen them again. We need to stiffen our resolve and become their ardent protectors and promoters. The crisis of democracy in our era has produced a crisis of faith in liberal institutions, and even worse, in liberal thought, Gopnik writes. Let's do everything we can to restore this faith, to keep this faith, and indeed, to spread this faith across our country. As people of faith, what higher calling could we have than to undertake this project together? In his book, Gopnik calls on all liberals to become more passionate, patriotic, and public-minded, and surrender any outworn attitudes that are too passive, planetary, and private. Here I find myself preaching to the proverbial choir. I watched so many of you at UU Wellesley Hills work so hard to vote love and defeat hate. I know that several of you were hoping for more decisive results than we got, and even the emergence of something like a national consensus. That may be a while in coming and a greater reach than we appreciated. There's no doubt that we still live in intensely polarized times. God willing, we are at the beginning of the end of them. It may take some time to restore the lost soul of a nation, as our president-elect advised us. We have to tend to one another with the greatest of care. If we love this country, we will have to learn to love each other too. We must discover newer ways to live into our favorite mottos and most popular hashtags. When Dr. Adams enumerated those five smooth stones of religious liberalism for us in the last century, he understood that we would need each one of them to succeed in our ultimate aims. We would have to keep polishing them, generation after generation, grasping them more and more handily in the future, as our progressive visions grew clearer and our ideals asked us to stretch our capacities. What Dr. Adams preached always, long after he left the pulpit and wherever he was in public, was a faith of the free, by the free, for the free. The greatest of our freedoms is the freedom to love amidst difference, across division even, and without embarrassment or apology. All our relationships need to be centered to a degree on mutual regard, a respect for individual votes and opinions and priorities. For us, an ethic of mutuality is nothing less than a spiritual imperative. That principle may or may not be what we preach, but it has to be what we practice. I hope breaking news has given some of you a sense of renewed hope, and beyond that, fresh purpose. Between election cycles, we have to live with each other, but more importantly, we have to live with ourselves. Amidst continual change, may care and compassion remain our truest companions.